B-Pod Studios.
The Felger and Mazz podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook.
Now, the show you'll be talking about.
That was not me hemming and hawing.
In therapy.
Socks.
It's Felger and Mazz, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Brad, how much of what went wrong this year can be fixed through transactions that you can make versus just internal improvement?
Well, I think you, just like anything else, John, you always look at, the bottom line is we got to get better, right? And so how do we get better? Obviously, whoever is here needs to continuously work to get better and use these accomplishments and disappointments as motivation to become hungrier and to continue to work. And I have no doubt within the character of our group that we'll do that. That's what these guys have always been about, and they've always done that. And then, you know, we'll always look at how do we best, evaluate our roster and make the small tweaks that maybe can put you over the top. You know, obviously, you know, we're in an interesting situation because I think, you know, again, we're 48 minutes away from, you know, doing our pregame shoot-around press conference today, right? Like in the finals. There was a lot that went right, and we can't lose sight of that. But we also, you know, are always going to be thinking about how to best move it forward and, you know, pursue what we're all trying to pursue.
And that, in my opinion, is the exact attitude that's going to keep the Celtics right where they are on the cusp. Because they're lacking just a certain something. And it's no longer experience. I'm sorry. We're now at the point, Maz. I don't know if you agree or disagree, that you can't say, well, they just haven't come of age yet. That was Tatum's, was it his fourth or his fifth conference final?
Either or. I don't know.
And I think it was.
I don't remember whether they made it Brown's rookie year or not.
I think it was Jalen Brown. I think it was Jalen Brown. Jalen Brown and Marcus Smart have been to one more conference final. So whether it's five for Tatum and six for Brown and Smart, or six and seven, or whatever. Like, they've been at this level now of the Final Four for 6 years. They've been to the final. They've had a chance to, you know, take command of the final and failed. They're now all heading into their third contracts. No longer can you say it's an experience thing. I think we're right there. I think you had a case to say that last year, maybe, or certainly the year before. Okay, now we're here.
Now you officially can't say, well, they're still so young. You can't. They've been in the league long enough. They're legitimate veterans of the NBA now.
Now we're here. We're here. So that's no longer it, and they're coming up short. So something has to change, either personnel-wise, makeup-wise, or the expectations set by the franchise. And that is the front office holding the players more accountable and expecting more and setting an edge there, setting an edge throughout the organization about what is expected. And if we do not achieve these things, we will make changes and make that clear. That has to come now, because I don't think it is clear to these players. It's obviously not clear because Brad Stevens feels just the opposite. So what changes can you expect? Well, the current players to be motivated over their past failures. That was the first thing that he said. And then minor tweaks, small tweaks. So he's not looking to make major personnel changes. And we can't lose sight, Maz, that we were just 48 minutes away from actually having this press conference it would have been in Boston before the pregame shoot-around of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Forgetting the fact that those 48 minutes are the only ones that matter, Brad. It was Game 7. These series come down to 7 games, and it's often Game 7. So it's often those 48 minutes are the only thing that matters. But he wants us to forget the 48 minutes and think about everything else, because a lot that went right, he said, and we can't lose sight of that. It's just, I think that is the wrong message for this team at this time. They need something that puts them over the top, and that's not going to do it.
Yeah, look, you got to shake it up here a little bit and ignite it. Like, you want to look for motivation. Start sending a message that, you know, hey, if we don't win, we're going to make changes. Then you make people sort of dig in, and you got to increase focus. You got to do all that kind of stuff.
It's time to put the players on notice that this is what is expected. This is where we are, and this is what we expect. And if not, there will be consequences.
No, instead, they just, I said it earlier, they redefine failure as successes. These are building blocks. Like every year, it's some version of, well, you know, it was the bubble. Well, you know, it was LeBron in Game 7. Well, it was Steph Curry. Well, it's too young. Blah, 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 blah. Like something needs to, something foundational has to change here.
I mean, if you keep taking the long-term view on everything, you'll never get there. There has to come a time where you basically say, no, we got to push harder. We got to go get it now. It's got to be now. And you'd like to think that something like this past season would push them to get there. Stevens is missing the point. This was win or go home. That's what this was the whole season. The whole season. Then they get to Game 7. And by the way, it wasn't close. Game 7 was not close. So let's say, well, we got to Game 7. You got your ass kicked. You know, and you can talk about the rolling the Tatum ankle if you want. The fact is you should have never been down 3-0 in the first place.
There's a lot that went right. We can't lose sight of that, he said. So it you really have to make it clear that it's about the championship now. And I don't know if he's prepared to do that. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't want to win. Of course they want to win. But now there has to be an edge set and a tone set from the top. And I think Stevens is too soft. I think Wick is too soft, and not that I expect the owner to do this. It's not the owner's job. The owner is to write the checks and hire the right people and get out of the way. And Wick, at least, apparently, allegedly, according to The Athletic, in that story today, snapped after Game 3 in Miami and gave the players a little business there in the locker room, which tells you the void that exists on that team because no one else is doing it. So Wick, who's super positive and super supportive, is the one that has to fill the void because the coach can't do it. The players don't have the right guy or the right mix, obviously. Stevens ain't going to do it. So it took the owner, it took Wick of all people to snap in the locker room. That's a sign that they just don't have the proper DNA to win a championship. And I think it's just too positive. It's too soft. I think the whole Celtics experience is too soft. I've been saying this for years about the fans and the whole experience. And I think right now they need something to push them over the edge. And the way they've gone at it here the last, whatever, 10 years ain't going to do it. It's, you know, the hand-holding and the positive reinforcement and all of that, like, that to me, it's not going to get them where they need to go.
There's just never a consequence, not real one. Like, you know, this isn't about, to me, the roster building or anything else. Like, you know, you can say, because Stevens brought in some decent players here. I'm not telling you Brogdon blows, but nobody ever loses a job over it. Like, nobody ever loses a job down there.
Except for Stevens. But, you know, again, what an epic fail from this team. What a complete fail. And the president comes out a couple days later and says we were 48 minutes away. A lot that went right. We can't lose sight of that. Exact wrong message for your team at this time. He did this in another way as well when he was asked about the team needing a culture shift or a sense of urgency, which is exactly what they need. Here's how he answered that. Number 12, Jimmy.
Throughout the year, players talked a lot about not getting bored with the little things, and especially said it's really on them and not really on Joe to create that sense of urgency and motivation. So from your perspective, as from your perch as a leader and as Joe's perch and his leadership, what do you guys need to do to create a little bit more of a culture shift to make sure that sense of urgency is more consistent?
Well, again, Jared, I don't want to overreact. We have an incredibly resilient group. They're tough. With their backs against the wall, they're amazing. And at the same time, we came up short. And, you know, certainly I thought a big part of coming up short was our early play in the last two series. You know, especially in the Miami series, right, when you go down 0-3, and Game 3 was awful. But the rest, we had our opportunities in Philly Game 1. We had our opportunity in Philly Game 4. We had our opportunity in Miami Game 1 and 2. Like, those are opportunities where we played well a lot of the time, but we weren't good enough. And that's shared results. That's on all of us. Again, it's not, you know, not coaches, not players. I look at how can I help everybody do that better, right? So we all play a role in that. We all have to play better for 48 minutes if we want to win. And in every game, they're all worth one in the playoffs. And we saw what we were like with our backs against the wall, with the exception of Game 7. We were pretty good.
Yeah, that one. Other than Game 7. Yeah.
Right, which, again, was the only one that mattered.
The only one that mattered. But, Mom, I had a good school year. I mean, I failed the final exam. I failed the class, but I was good for the first couple months. Did that fly?
God, no. What, are you kidding me?
But that's what Stevens wants, but that flies with the Celtics.
I like Draymond Green's explanation way better. They thought they won Game 6. They thought they had it in the bag. They got home and got spanked. And I'm sorry, even without Tatum, they should be able to win the game. They still have more talent than Miami without Tatum. Should still win the game. You're at home.
100%. So, other than Game 7, so it's like, really? I mean, if these kids have just been, if this is 5 years ago and you've just drafted these kids and they're coming along and you got to hold their hand and the soft touch and the long view, makes perfect sense. Now, really? After you were so heavily favored and frankly, rightfully so, so badly outclassed that Miami team and you had it all there for you and you do that in Game 7 and then you come out a couple days later and say, well, 48 minutes away, we a lot that went right, we can't lose sight of that. Other than Game 7, we were pretty good at that. Like, wow. If that's what's coursing through the halls and the veins of that Celtics team down there, they're not going to go anywhere. Those players now need a push. And I just fear that Stevens, that the whole group there is not the ones to give it to him. It certainly ain't coming from the coach. That's obvious. And it's not coming from Stevens. That's obvious. So where's it coming from? That's kind of a scary thought if you're a Celtics fan.
They're great with their backs against the wall. Unless the backs are really pressed against the wall. They're just kind of up against the wall.
All right, your thoughts and your calls right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Continues on the Sports Hub.
Brad, a couple of players mentioned by the end of the year losing a defensive identity, not getting to the point defensively that they were at last year, and just general frustration about their play at that end. When the messaging was offense for a lot of the year from Joe, from the coaching staff, how do you guys kind of grapple with the players wanting to get back to defense?
Well, I think the first thing that you have to do is, okay, look at what's true, right? And we're the second best defense in the NBA. Right. So something was good, too. Right. And we were the second best offense in the NBA in the regular season. So that usually portends to give you a great shot. There's no question that Rob's injury at the start of the year and him only playing 35 regular season games made it tougher to be, maybe from a lineup standpoint, what we could be defensively at our most dynamic. And so at the end of the day, I thought that, you know, we had to improve offensively to become better, to compete. And we had to be able to play defense and maintain that level and identity that we had prior to be our very best. And, you know, on both ends, we came up a little bit short. I do think that if I had to say, you know, one end that we came up more short on in our last few games, it was probably the offensive end. You know, with the turnovers, and we obviously didn't shoot the ball well, and Miami shot it great. Like, that's the one thing that, you know, the competition is real. The competition is tough. Miami was terrific. Miami played a terrific series. But overall, I thought we were good on both ends of the floor when I looked at it in totality. Could we have been better? Sure.
That last part there, obviously very tough for him to admit. But you got to look at the positive. You got to look at the good things, too. Second in the league in defense in the regular season. There's just too much of that. There's just too much of that at this time. The team is no longer developing. It's developed. This is it. This is the team. Now it's time to expect more. And the hand-holding and the just God. It's just, I don't... I don't think it's going to help you. It's not going to help you get over the edge. And that's just my big takeaway. It's just too soft. The whole thing down there is too soft. Your thoughts. How about Joe in Florida? Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Mike, you're finally getting it. It's the fish rots from the head down, right? So listen to that guy's press up. It's always this soft serve ice cream thing. He's the guy who's been changing their diapers for 5 years on the bench. I also contend if he was half a man an hour back, he would have cut off the throne and come down and coach those boys how to be men when they're so close to winning it all.
So let's forget about Auerbach, but, I mean, Stevens is a more qualified coach than Joe Mazzulla. He could have done that at any point in time.
Absolutely.
I don't blame him for holding that against him. It's like, what's best for the organization? Probably at some point you stepping down there and taking over, and he doesn't want to do it. All right, so I don't think that's unfair.
But they tuned him out once already.
It's true. So they don't like him. Maybe that's something they need, something they don't like. I don't know, someone to challenge them.
The problem is they're childish.
So, I mean, well, whatever. I mean, I just think it's an okay thing to bring up. The most qualified coach in the organization wasn't coaching. Yeah, and the first thing that he said, I think that last answer, too, about the defense gives you more insight into the Joe Mazzulla thing about it's all about the offense. It's all about the offense. You ask Joe Mazzulla about the defense, and says, well, we miss shots. It comes from above. That Stevens at one point said, I thought where we needed to improve the most was offensively. I thought. And he took ownership of that.
Well, but that's true. Coming into the year, they did need to improve more on offense.
Fair enough. Well, all I'm saying is I think that what you hear from Mazzulla, which is what we've said all along, comes from upstairs. The whole organization, that was an organization decision to emphasize the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I look again, going into the year, I think it was right. I just think they took it way too far. Like, again, so I look at it and I say the comment that Stevens made that made me go, huh? He said, you know, look, if it's up to me, I'll take a dunk on every possession. That's not what Mazzulla said. Mazzulla said 3 points. I want 3 points every single time. So I think somewhere there's a disconnect, at least a little. I'm not telling you Stevens doesn't want to shoot threes. I'm telling you what they became was a joke. They went way too far with it.
Here's Keith in Virginia. Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, sir. Good evening, guys. How y'all doing?
We're good, Keith.
All right. I think Rob Williams needs to get an offense. I honestly and truly think he needs to get an offense because if he thinks he's going to dunk his way through the NBA Finals, that's not going to work. And well, if you live by the three-pointer, you will die by the three-pointer.
All right, Keith, I'm with you. I mean, Rob Williams should aspire to be more than DeAndre Jordan or
Nerlens Noel.
Who is the guy in Detroit?
Capella.
Oh, Andre Drummond.
Andre Drummond, right. He should aspire to be more than Andre Drummond and one of those guys. Because he's got more touch than those guys.
Definitely.
You've brought it up a million times. Just look at him at the free throw line. He's got a stroke. So why not just get a little bit of a game there and give the team a different look, a different element?
I so wanted someone to ask that question today. Has Robert Williams improved offensively? Has he improved? He's the same guy he was 2 years ago.
100%. Scotty in the car. Go, Scott.
Hey, guys. The fact that we even have to talk about the coach being, you know, a reason why they're not playing well is infuriating. I don't remember an NBA championship team needing a coach to rub their back. For them to be motivated to win a championship, you either get it or you don't, and until they do, they'll never be more than what they are. Thank you.
That's it. And I don't know if Stevens or the organization has what it takes to push the players in that direction and hold them accountable, you know, risk angering them or losing them. And I'm not telling you, like, it's easy. I mean, the modern athlete, that's a hard pull there. Challenging them and pushing them and then versus losing them. Like, I'm not telling you that's easy. But they got to find that spot, and I don't think they're there. Not even close. Pat and Newton. Yes, Pat.
Yeah, you keep saying how Marcus Smart needs to, like, leave or get traded so that they can open up a position for, you know, one of the younger guys to move up and fill. But who do you think these younger guys are? Because they're not the type to step up like that. They would have done it already. Really what you need to do is, you know, adjust your team's mentality and game plan to fit the needs of the players. Like, if you go back to being a defensive-first team, Marcus Smart's going to fill that role, and it's going to make the whole thing gel better like it did last year. They were so close, and then you just turn back and go a different direction. It's crazy.
Okay, well, Maz, why do you think Marcus Smart, clearing the decks of Marcus Smart, creates the opening that you need?
Because I think he's in the way. I think, and again, I'm talking to the politics of it. He's older than those two guys. He was there when they got there. What was it? The opener 2 years ago, we referred to them as the kids. You remember that?
Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago. But in his mind, that's what it is. It's his team, and they showed up to play on it. And they sense that. He talks down to them.
So the caller says if the kids haven't figured it out now, they never will. That might be true. But like I said before, my plan is to see if I can bring it out of Tatum. I don't know if I can. I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know if I can because he may not have it. But I think that in the current state, you're never going to get there.
It's still your best shot.
The only shot you got is to see if he can fill that, grow into that thing, and get more of that mindset that you need. And with Marcus Smart gone, it has to be his team. And now it's the response. You'll find out. He'll be force-fed the situation. We'll see what becomes of it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the best plan, I said this the other day, plan A should still be to try to figure out whether Tatum and Brown can figure it out. Like, that should be plan A.
Well, and then second on that list, after Smart is gone, is to get Brown to a place where he's happy supporting Jason Tatum. Not competing with him or looking over his shoulder with him and how is he treated versus how I'm treated. And also a big one, how is he paid versus how I'm paid. And the shots, I think Brown's come to grips with a lot of that on the floor. But the whole thing, that Jaylen Brown has to assume a strong vice president role, and this is about making Tatum better and the team better in your role. And quit worrying about, you know, the sacrifices that you're making. Like, so that's a part to it too. Because I think there's a little bit of a competition there between those two. Not that they dislike each other or that, but again, throw it open to Tatum, see if he can handle it. I don't know if he can, but with the current condition, he's never going to be put in a spot where you can find out. Steven Attleboro. Go ahead, Steve. Okay. Here's Tom and Quincy on the Red Sox. Hi, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I heard what you guys were talking about earlier when I was working, and I couldn't be happier with the mini rant about the current, could be called landslide the Red Sox are having against a pretty poor team. My whole fears became, like, reality with this season because this is what I exactly thought they'd be. I'm a little bit better. They're still in last place, all right? And they're shelling out, and they're losing to these teams that are borderline – suck teams. So we're heading into this situation now where everyone that I was told was going to break through, Tristan Casas of the world, and I have to be told by younger Red Sox fans that are telling me, I don't know, I'm old, you don't know what you're looking at. Casas is batting about 160, and we waited 3 years and sat through a black hole with Franchy Cordero and Dahlback. And this is the amount of offense I get from them. They're hurting, man, and they're on the downfall so friggin' hot, and it's exactly what I thought was going to happen.
Are they in the downfall, Maz, or are they just in this flat, purgatory holding pattern?
I mean, I think it's that. You know, they're one game over 500, so they don't completely suck, but I think in a lot of ways that's worse. And I'm not talking about draft picks or anything else. I mean that there would be urgency to fix it. You can't be that bad and think that everything's okay. And, you know, like this is sort of a theme, I guess, if you want to, not to cross sports, but with the Celtics are, you know, they think that they're still getting better. You know, the kids are coming in the system, it's developing, it's getting there. In the case of the Red Sox, it may or may not be true. Like, I have no idea when they're going to be good again. I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Like, really good.
Yeah.
Like, actually good.
No, I have not, right. Like, a championship caliber or a threat. Okay, even if you're on the periphery of being a threat.
I'm with you. It doesn't look close, and I also feel like the ownership has completely lost the appetite to make big moves to have it happen overnight. Like, they've lost the complete
exactly
appetite to spend the kind of money that would... Because you can turn it over, you know, overnight if you spend.
You know, you could go out and get yourself a couple of veteran players and sign them to 3 or 4 year contracts without spending huge dollars. That is what they did in 2013. Victorino got a 3-year deal. Napoli got a 2- or 3-year deal. So they spent some money and they brought in guys that could stabilize it while they rebuilt for 3 years or 2 years or whatever. This is freaking rent-a-body. That's what that is. We're going to rent a guy for a year and see how it goes because they're too freaking chicken crap to go out and sign some sort of multi-year deal because they're afraid they'll lose money on it.
All right, let's lighten the mood for a little bit here, shall we?
Maz, you forgot about Johnny Gomes. They signed Johnny Gomes.
Was he a multi-year? He might have been a one-year.
He was a multi-year, I believe.
What if you're at a grocery store and the guy right next to you in line is pointing at you and yelling at you? Are you going to go get security or are you going to do something right there?
No, I'm going to throw a pineapple at him is what I'm going to do, Johnny.
Jimmy just wanted an excuse to play the song.
Yeah.
So lightening the mood, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about it's time for Maz's Tears.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. She's
Maz's
like, look those up.
Tears.
Yeah.
Okay, the subject matter is not particularly joyous.
Not exactly lightening the mood.
You want to tell us what the subject matter is?
Yeah, biggest Boston collapses of all time, or disappointments, failures.
Gags.
Yeah, gags. Call it whatever you want.
Biggest Boston sports gags of all time.
It's a long list.
We'll be choking on it right after Murray gets you updated.
Much patience, nor do I have much time right now to be in at work.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're back with more Felger and Maz.
Bernardi Auto, they've got Audis, Hondas, and Toyotas. They are the ones who sponsor who Maz thinks is a fraud and who's for real. Maz's Tears.
Yeah, those are the tears of a clown.
Maz's Tears.
The second tier.
Hold on, let me get my pen.
Maz's Tears.
Dallas.
Yep. Buffalo.
Tennessee.
Maz's Tears.
Third tier.
Okay, here we go. Hold on, let me get my pen.
Maz's Tears. 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 Tears.
All right, it's that time of the week. Maz's Tears, presented by the Bernardi Automotive Group. And when it comes to auto dealers, the Bernardi Auto Group always finishes first. They sell and service Acura, Audi, Honda, Nissan, Toyota, and Volvo. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life. Visit them now at BernardiAutoGroup.com. Again, Maz, the subject of this week's Tears is...
biggest gags in Boston sports history, and again, relatively recent. Let's call it post-1975.
Thank you.
Somewhere in that area, so we're not going back to Johnny Pesky holding the ball.
Thank you.
Okay, like, let's not
or
do
anything Milt Schmidt did.
Yeah, let's not do that sort of stupidity. You get the idea. So, last week we did greatest comebacks. Celtics lost, so now we do greatest gags, because they're on the list.
Sorry.
Yep, so we're going to start with Tier 5. Again, Tier 1 would be the worst. The worst gags, tier five, two of them on the list, because the painful ones, there are many of them in Boston sports history. 2014 Bruins, remember them?
Of course.
The 2014 Bruins, after losing to the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup the year before, they won the President's Trophy. They lost in the second round to Montreal. They led the series 3-2. They lost game 7 at home.
Sounds familiar.
2018 Celtics.
Interesting choice here.
This was Jim Murray's nominee. I put it down towards Tier 5 because I don't think it's a massive gag.
I don't think it's a gag at all.
But they were leading the series against...
LeBron and the Cavs.
Yep. Had Game 7 at home, and they lost the game at home, and it was not a good showing.
And they were up going into the fourth quarter or even in the fourth quarter. Like, I know, but...
Yeah, they were up, and that was one that was like, holy crap, this is where... It's like Tatum's young then, like real young. And then they went away from him. Tatum was actually having a hell of a game in Game 7, and they went away from him, and they blew that game at home. I thought that should be on that list. I'm glad you put it on there.
So I did. I put it on in Tier 5 because, again, NBA Game 7 at home, that's an 80% win rate. In the playoffs, home teams win in the NBA playoffs in Game 7 80% of the time.
Marginal.
Tier 4. Let's kick it up a notch, shall we?
Yeah.
2004 Bruins. Another team, first place.
Let me tell you, there's a Bruins choke for every tier.
There really is, though. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and that might actually bear itself out. Actually, not quite, but anyway. They were up 3-1 against Montreal. 3-1.
I think they were first in the conference or first in their division. That was the Joe Thornton team, their best Joe Thornton team. As you were just saying, they were up 3-1 on Montreal.
And again, Game 7 at home. Blew that series. Not one a lot of people remember, I don't think, pre-Bergeron, pre-those guys.
But that was a big one. That was when Kyle MacLaren took out Richard Jednik with that check to the head. It wasn't all that bad, but of course, they were calling the gendarme up there in Montreal. No, this deserves to be on the list.
2010 Patriots versus the Jets. This was not a great Patriot team, but they went 14-2. They were at home in the divisional playoffs. I think they were a 9.5-point favorite, if I remember right, against the Jets.
Sounds about right. They were 8-0 at home that year. Again, you mentioned the 14-2 record. Brady was an MVP that year. I'd have this higher. I was devastated by this one.
And only a few weeks prior, they had beaten the Jets 45-3 in Foxborough. Yep. They came home, they lost the game. Gag, massive gag. And 2012 Celtics, not a totally egregious one because they were fading out of the Kevin Garnett years, but they had Miami at home, game six, with a chance to clinch the series. They won game five in Miami. Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
sure, of course.
How stunning that was. They came home. LeBron Murray gave him the hillbilly wipe. Great performance by LeBron James. The Celtics lost. So the reason why I put it down is because
it's not a gag.
Well, LeBron
got beat by an all-time great.
LeBron was better than they were.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, LeBron was better than they were.
Another marginal gag.
Right, but you're home for game six. It was marginal, I agree. Which is why it's low on the list. Now we start to get to the good one.
Ah, right, tier three. Give me a pen.
Tier three. 2010 Celtics, NBA Finals. Up 13 points in the second half.
Oh, they were?
Against the Lakers in Game 7 at L.A.
They were up 13?
They were up 3-2 in the series when they went back to L.A. They lost Game 6. Game 7, they were up 13 points in the second half.
I forgot they were up 13.
And they gagged in the fourth quarter. The Lakers won the series. It was Kobe's first win against the Celtics. And 2006 Patriots AFC title game. You could argue Indianapolis was the better team. The Patriots were up 20-3 at halftime.
Yes, they were.
For the right to go to the Super Bowl, 20-3. Indy came back, won the game. And that game indirectly, I think, led to one of the biggest gags in Boston sports history. But we'll get to that in a moment. So that's the end of Tier 3. Only a couple of teams there. Now let's go to Tier 2.
The real pain.
Yeah. All right, no particular order. Here you go, reading them from the bottom on the simulcast. 2023 Bruins. That's right, this year. 2023 Bruins set a record for points, record for wins. First round up 3-1 against the Florida Panthers. Blew it. 2023 Celtics. That's right, this year. Against the Miami Heat, you overcome a 3-0 series deficit. You do so to get Game 7 in your building. After losing the finals the year before, championship right out in front of you, they get spanked. 2010 Bruins, we all know this story. Up 3-0 against the Flyers. Gag. 2003 Red Sox, Grady Little. You know they went to New York? They were down 3-2. They won Game 6. And we're up late Game 7 with Pedro on the mound and Grady Little sent him out for the 8th.
Oh, I remember.
Oh, yeah. We remember well.
Let's not forget they won Game 6 to force Game 7 and had that one in their pocket. 2017 Patriots versus the Eagles.
That's a gag?
It is from this standpoint. You should have won the game. And you didn't play Malcolm Butler really at any point in the game. So I think Bill choked. In this game, this is a Belichick choke, but it's a major, major loss and a blemish in Patriots history to lose that game to Philadelphia. And 2019 Bruins losing to the Blues, Tier 2, Game 7 at home, and it's only Tier 2 because the ones on Tier 1 are all-timers in sports history, not just Boston sports.
Yeah, I would have that one in Tier 1, but these aren't my tiers. They're Maz's tiers.
That's why we call them Maz's tiers.
So you want Tier 1?
Yeah.
Tier 1 is, I think, well, some are obvious, and I think some are well done. Go ahead.
Okay, so it's. I think these are self-explanatory. They're sort of landmark events in sports history. 1978, Bucky Dent home run at Fenway Park. The Red Sox had a 14.5 game lead in July. They blew it, lost the one-game playoff, done.
And in the one-game playoff, wasn't it a 5-2 lead in the seventh or something like that?
They were up, I think it was 4-2.
4-2 in the seventh.
They lost the game 5-4.
When this little pissant came up and popped one into the net.
Correct. Bucky Dent against Mike Torres. 3-run homer, you lose the game 5-4. 1979 Bruins, we all remember this, the 78-79 season. Too many men on the ice, on the verge of winning Game 7 in Montreal. It was the league semifinal. It wasn't the final.
That's right.
But they're on the verge of winning that game and took a penalty with too many men on the ice with 2 minutes to go, I think it was. Was it a minute to go?
Yikes.
It was a minute or two left.
It was a minute plus.
What a gag.
And from what I understand, just to add to it, the too many men on the ice call, not ticky-tack. The people who were there who have seen the video.
Oh, it was clear as day.
Yeah, they were skating with six people up and down the ice. They might even have been warned that they were doing it. They were so mental. And then in the third period, they kept sending a sixth guy out. And the refs warned them. Said, the next time you do this, we can't, like, this
can't
is
look past
egregious.
It.
And they did it again with under 2 minutes left. And the ref's like, I got to call it on you now. They were like, it was like the ice capades out there. They were so mental.
And if I'm not mistaken, that game led to the firing of Don Cherry as coach.
I think that was his last, yeah.
Yep, I think Harrison and then fired Don Cherry as coach. It was really the end of an era in Bruins history. They weren't
the same ever since.
Yeah, anatomically, the roster was not the same after that. Game 6, 1986, Bill Buckner. Now, why would I mention that second to last? Because it was bad. It was really, really bad. Don't get me wrong. It was horrible, but there's one that's worse. One that's worse, if you ask me, the biggest gag job in Boston sports history is the 07 Patriots. I'm sorry. Am I wrong to do that?
No, it's my number one.
No.
Okay.
18-1 is the biggest gag job in this city's history.
Yeah, and I'll just say again. When the ball rolled through Buckner's legs, it was a tie game.
Right.
People forget this. If he makes the play, you're just going to the next frame.
Correct.
And they would have found a way to screw it up there.
Where you would have found a different way to lose.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. It wasn't like that blew the championship. That just blew extra innings. People don't appreciate that enough. No. So I'm with you. The 07 Patriots. The stakes for the 07 Patriots were greater than anything.
Of course, the Red Sox were up 5-2 in the 10th inning with two outs, the bases empty, and two strikes.
Okay. Well, then we're going to talk about Schiraldi or Stanley or who's behind the plate?
Gedman.
Rich Gedman. Like those who were more than Bill Buckner. It was tied when it rolled through Buckner's legs.
Absolutely. I sort of put the whole 10th inning.
Nightmare of
I mean, they had the World Series and they blew it. But the 07 Patriots, number one on the list. You're going to become the first team in history to go 19-0 and then blow it? that one's not going away. That's going to leave a mark.
Well, that could be one that could never be topped.
Correct.
Because what could be the stakes other than that?
Correct.
So
it might be the single biggest loss in professional sports history.
It's up there.
It, you know, might not be as tragic as some of the others, but losing the game, ooh, devastating.
All right. How'd you enjoy those tears? Final word.
Painful to you.
Final word.
Make sure you put that on the web so we get credit for the web hits.
Final word comes your way.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
.org.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this 4-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Nobody.
We'll wrap the day, for those that might have missed this earlier, with our own Jimmy Stewart, Jay Stu behind the glass, playing the role of Celtics GM and the drastic moves he'd make to fix the team this summer.
Yeah, I mean, look, the standard here is what it is. I don't have a problem calling him soft because it's a relative term.
So then you need to trade Tatum. You need to trade your best player to change the DNA of the franchise then.
No, he may not have the makeup that you need.
The Denver Nuggets traded Carmelo Anthony to the New York Knicks. And they got better after they traded Carmelo Anthony. Now, the Denver Nuggets are not the incarnation that's in the NBA Finals, but at the time, everybody's critical. You can't trade the number 3 pick in the draft. You can't trade a talent like that. And what happened? The Denver ended up getting better, and it took a longer time to get to the finals, but they got better by trading a player that wasn't the right fit for their DNA and to get to that next level.
I mean, if Tatum's Carmelo, forget it.
Trade him now, then.
I
would like to be a year early on making the franchise superstar change or the coaching change than a year or two too late.
I mean, I wouldn't argue against it, but I know it's not going to happen, so, you know.
I'd find a different way.
No, they're going to run it all back next year. They're going to make movement on the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th guy on the roster, and this is what we're going to be. We're going to be in the Final Four. We're going to be bitching about them not making the finals again. Mark it down, calendar June 1st, 2024 Felger and Maz show.
That would be my fear.
But more endorsements, though. Maybe he'll have Tatum Tots. You know, start your breakfast with eggs and Tatum Tots. Something else.
But you want to change the culture? You trade Tatum this offseason.
I mean, just to amplify this,
yeah.
If you think he's Carmelo, and I mean the collective you, Jimmy, okay? If a person out there thinks Tatum's Carmelo, it's over. It's over.
Trade him now, then.
So, first of all, we're 2023, not 2024, Stu.
No. The idea is that a year from now, we're doing the same exact show.
I see. But we could have furthered your argument there because we actually looked it up, Maz. Why don't you tell the people what you told me earlier?
Jimmy, you know what they got in the Carmelo Anthony deal?
I don't remember the exact details.
A bunch of stuff that included a 2016 lottery pick that became Jamal Murray.
Oh! So the Carmelo trade did contribute to their current mix.
Ah.
Yeah. So they got Jamal Murray from that deal.
Who, by the way, I would have drafted instead of Jaylen Brown that year.
I told you I like Jamal Murray in that deal.
I love him. He's a sniper that you need for the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Speaking of the Nuggets, quickly, who do we like Nuggets Heat?
Miami.
Denver in five.
Miami.
It's Jokic's year.
I'm going Butler. I think he's going to get Murray's head. I think he's a puss, too.
Look up his girlfriend, Maz, during the break.
Oh, Jesus, Murray. Why do you do this to me?
Denver in five.
Because I know you want to.
Because I'm not afraid to have an opinion.
Heat in six or five.
I hope you're right. I would love to see Miami and Jimmy Butler pull this thing off with that team.
Denver's not as good as the Celtics. The Denver can't play defense like the Celtics. People forget. Jimmy Butler had some rough offensive games there at the end. You were a part of it. Like, you did start to play some defense at the end of that series, and you played him well. I don't know. Does Denver have a single guy that can do, like, some of the stuff you do?
I'll tell you, the one thing that worries me about Denver, if I'm Miami, is Jokic knows where to go with the ball better than the Celtics do.
For sure.
So,
yeah, you can't really zone like you can against them. I hear you. But it's Butler's time. And toughness, smarts, all that. It's going to work against the Nuggets just like it worked against you. All right, so that's that. Here comes the baseball.
Well, Murray, you're not kidding.
I told you.
Maz, we're coming on the baseball hour.
Big picture Red Sox, because talking game to game with the Red Sox, what the hell's the point of that? So a big picture question I have for the Red Sox. We'll get to that right away.
Okay. And while you flip through the photo gallery. No commercials here, just an update with Big Jim Murray. We're back tomorrow, Maz, for you know what it is already.
Agenda free.
Friday comes your way tomorrow. We'll see you then.
See
you.
Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.